Hey everyone, and welcome to Tara Tea. I'm your host Tara, and today we are covering 2011's Scream 4. Scream 4 originally came out on April 15th, 2011, and I feel like it gets a bad rap. I really enjoyed Scream 4 when it came out, and I love it now. This was the very first Scream that I actually got to follow from announcement to ending, which didn't always help when it came to spoilers. As always, we are full of spoilers here, so let's jump into it. The movie begins with a phone call, of course. Sherry answers the phone and it's a wrong number. She hangs up and meets Trudy in the kitchen. They're gonna watch Saw 4, Trudy saying that it's not scary, it's gross. Sherry thinks he's a creative killer, meaning Jigsaw, but Trudy says that there's no character development in the movies and you don't care about anyone. She's texting her Facebook stalker and he's like, hey, you're hot, I wanna kill you. And Sherry tells her to delete him and she says she did, but he hacked his way back in. Sherry says to report him, and Trudy says he's really hot, showing her a picture that Sherry says is Channing Tatum in his Abercrombie days. The phone rings again, and it's Ghostface, who says if she hangs up again, he'll cut through her flesh until he hits bone. Sherry hands the phone to Trudy, saying it's for her. Trudy asks who's on the phone. He says the last person she's ever gonna see alive. Sherry tells her it's a prank and tells her to hang up. Trudy's like, why did you give the phone to me? And she's wanting her to make sure all the doors are locked. The phone rings again. Sherry basically ignores the call, and Trudy's stalker tells them they need to answer. So they go to the front door to check out what's going on when the doorbell rings. Trudy tells her not to open it, and Sherry thinks it's all just a joke. Trudy asks who's at the door, and of course no one answers them. Her stalker messages saying, I dare you to open the door. Trudy tells Sherry not to open it because she's scared. Of course, Sherry does anyways, and no one's there. Sherry goes outside. She doesn't see anybody. Trudy's phone goes off saying, I'm not outside. I'm right beside you. Ghostface jumps out and stabs Trudy in the chest. As she falls, she lifts her hands like straight up over her head. And I remember thinking in theaters, oh shit, this is going to be terrible. Sherry goes to run at the front door when another Ghostface comes up and slices her throat. We hear screaming and see the title card for Stab 6. And I was like, thank fucking Jesus. Because this movie had one hell, like, that was the thing, like, being so into reading the behind the scenes, like, the Screams have always had a hellacious production since the first one. But this one especially was plagued with rewrites that were not, like, MPAA cuts or anything like that. This was just a movie that was changed so much for really not a whole lot of reason. Like, Kevin Williamson had his usual issues where he got too busy and all of that, but there was also a lot of studio meddling. There was a lot of just chaos in casting and all that, and just, I was very worried going into this because there wasn't a lot of promo. Like, the only thing they really had was the Scream 4 app, which is where you could play as, like, Ghostface, or you could play as a victim, and then they had the Ghostface voice app. But that was really, like, the only promo. Like, they had an MTV Movie Awards thing where you got to see the trailer, but I don't know, it just seemed like everyone was kind of phoning it in a bit. And then you had the Courtney Cox, David Arquette rumors, and of their future divorce. Like, it was just a lot. Not to mention, the day of or the night before, I cannot remember, I was on IMDb, and back then they had message boards. And someone, I guess, had seen the movie and put in the title of their post, Jill and Charlie are the killers of Scream 4. And so the entire movie was ruined for me. So I was very nervous. So when that Stab title card came up, I was like, oh my God, thank you. Like, I am gonna hate this movie otherwise. So we go and zoom in on Rachel and Chloe. They're watching Stab 6, and Rachel is like big mad, saying that it's the death of horror. Chloe's like, well, it scared me. And Rachel's like, a Facebook killer? And Chloe's like, yeah, it should be Twitter. Rachel says that teenagers deconstructing horror movies with postmodern meta shit has been done to death. Chloe says that she likes the Stab movies because it's not aliens, zombies, or little ghost girls. There's something real about a guy with a knife that just snaps. And I've said this a million times, I completely agree with this statement because Scream scared the shit out of me because of how human Ghostface is. Back in the day when this movie came out, like when Scream came out, like 1996, it was all like the Cult of Thorn and Jason was a zombie and Freddy was Freddy. and it was a lot of just bullshit in horror, and it wasn't as scary. And a lot of people say that Scream's not scary. They say it's more comedy. And yeah, I'll give you that. It is a lot more comedy. However, the thing with Scream is that it's always been about a real, like, person who just snaps and decides to kill people, like a real psychopath. And to me, that's scarier than, like, ghosts and demons and zombies and stuff like that. Rachel says the sequels don't know when to stop. There's always some random girl who gets a call that gets her killed. She says there's no element of surprise and you see everything coming. Chloe then leans over and stabs her in the stomach, asking if that surprised her. She says that she talks too much and stabs her again, telling her to shut the fuck up and watch the movie. And then you see the title card for Stab 7. Jenny Randall and Marnie Cooper are watching Stab 7. Jenny says that she's seen it like 5 times and it gets her every time. She says that it's like the Twilight Zone, like a movie within a movie. And Marnie thinks it's illogical, because it is. If Stab 6 is playing in Stab 7, then wouldn't you be confused when the movie started like that in theaters? You would think you're seeing the wrong movie. And is it that someone's making a real-life Stab 7 where they all know about the Stab movies? Like, is it all in-universe? Because, like, you have moments where, like, in Scream 1, there's Halloween. So Halloween exists. However, in Halloween H2O, they're watching Scream 2, which they should not be. Because Halloween is its own universe that Scream watches the movies of. So I guess it's kind of like that. But if that was a series that did that, like, of their own movies, it would be insane and stupid. So I do hate that. They talk about how they live in Woodsboro and that the first 3 movies are about Sydney Prescott and that she threatened to sue if they continue to use her story. But unless there's something we don't know, there's nothing else, unless they mean like using Sydney and making up other stories. We find out that Stab 5 has time travel and they consider that the worst, which that is actually a reference to Nightmare on Elm Street. I think it's the Dream Child. Wes Craven wanted to use time travel and the studio refused. And they actually don't talk about Stab 4 at all. So I'm very curious as to what happened there. Jenny hears a sound upstairs, goes to check it out. She left a window open and the phone rings. Marnie grabs it and it's Ghostface, who says that he's the last person she's gonna see alive. Jenny starts laughing and we see that it's a prank. Jenny's like, oh, someone falls for it every year. And then we hear Marnie gagging and the phone cuts out. Jenny goes downstairs and sees the phone's on the floor. Jenny thinks that she's pranking her and says that she wants her to walk by an open door so she can pop out. The phone rings and we see Ghostface run around the back of the house.
You don't have the app on your phone, so you can't talk like Ghostface. Can you?
Yes, I can.
Who is this?
Not an app.
Of course, we know that this is the real Ghostface on the phone. Jenny asks if it's Trevor, and he's like, does this sound like a Trevor? He says that he's the director, she's got a fun part in his movie, and to not blow it. She asks what movie, and he says the same one Marnie's in, but her part got cut away back. He tells her they'll have some fun with her before she dies. She starts talking about how smart she is when he calls her a dumb blonde and asks where Marnie is. He says she's on the cutting room floor. He tells her she better start running, and Marnie is thrown through the glass window dead. And this scene always reminds me of the chair scene in the original, which I'm sure it's supposed to replicate once they went back in and redid it, because they erased everything else that replicated the original. We'll get into that. But the reason why this reminds me of it so much is that this movie's not very loud up until that moment. Marnie goes flying through just like in the original. It's super fucking loud and it scares the hell out of me every time. So Ghostface appears and is chasing Jenny through the house. She goes to a part of her house that I guess is under some sort of construction, and Ghostface stabs her in the back. She falls down some stairs. She crawls down and opens the garage door, and I guess her legs are hurt or she's paralyzed because she's crawling. Like, she does not get up at all. And she tries to crawl through the garage while Ghostface lowers the door on her back, and we get like a really gross crunching sound. He pulls her back in, flips her over, and she screams as he's going to stab her. We get our title card. I think it's a weak opening. I did not like it. Originally, it's always 3 couples. And I honestly thought, I was like, this is Dewey and Gale. Like, before we saw the trailers or anything like that, because once you see the trailers, you know that's not what happens. But before any trailers came out, I was like, it's Dewey and Gale. They're going to bite the dust because they can't make it through four movies. Like, that's just not happening. Well, I was obviously wrong, but I think it's a weak opening. I wish they would have kept the original. I wish they would have kept a lot of the original stuff they had. So we get a look at Woodsboro, and this was filmed in Michigan, so it's not exactly the same as if it was filmed in California. And of course, the second one was filmed at Windsor College, so wherever the hell that is, some girl's school. It's not gonna look like Woodsboro. And then three is Hollywood made to look like Woodsboro, so that could really be fucking anywhere. But this is supposed to be Woodsboro, so it kind of sucked they didn't go back to California. But we could see a lot of behind-the-scenes footage, and you learned a lot about who was dying when because of Banana Doc in Michigan. We'll get into that. So, in Woodsboro, we have Ghostface decorations on all the light poles. We see a car pull up. It's Sydney and her publicist, Rebecca. Today's the anniversary of the original killings, and we see a display at a bookstore. Sydney's written a book, Out of Darkness. And we then cut to Dewey and Gale's house, where he's getting up for work. She's staying in bed. Dewey goes to get in his car when Kirby goes speeding by. She pulls up to Jill's house and tells her before she gets in to promise not to kill her. Trevor called last night and Jill is not taking his calls. Olivia's her next door neighbor. She gets in the car saying Trevor called her too. He apparently told Olivia that he's worried that Jill's cousin coming into town is distracting her from knowing how sorry he is. Olivia asks if she's seen the Grim Reaper or the Angel of Death, meaning Sydney. Kirby says that she's the reason she loves horror movies, and Jill says she doesn't really know her. Olivia says other people die around her, never her, so Stab is the wrong franchise. It should be Final Destination. The phone rings, and it says Jenny on the caller ID, however, the voice is Ghostface. He asks what her favorite scary movie is, and Jill puts it on speaker so they could hear him ask again. Olivia says she got a call like that from Marnie this morning. We get a quick jump scare of Kirby running a stop sign and almost hitting a car. Deputy Hicks is getting ghost faces removed from the poles. She apologizes to Dewey that he can't get away from this. She says that she wishes... blah, blah. She says that she wishes she could have been on the force when he was solving these crimes. She says intense investigations really bond relationships. Hicks asks about Gale, and Dewey says she's writing fiction. She offers him a lemon square, and he says no. She replies that it's not cheating on his wife if he eats her lemon square. And that's not a euphemism. That's like her just being weird and a red herring. He says no, but he would be cheating on his diet. While they're talking, Perkins calls and tells him to come to the Randall house, and they both leave. He says it's bad. So we cut to Gale, who's watching an interview of Sydney. The reporter talks about the seven Stab movies that are based on the books by Gale about Sydney. But this is a little bit of a weird line because only the first three would be about Sydney, like we previously hear. And Dewey said Gale is now writing fiction. So what in the hell else has Gale been writing if it's not fiction, if there are seven books for the seven movies? Sydney's life is apparently boring between 3 and 4 for the last 11 years, so like, I don't understand the correlation here. Anyway, Sydney says she doesn't blame Gale, and that if she was a victim for too long, it was up to her to reinvent herself. Gale turns off the television, and she's gonna try to reinvent herself, but she doesn't know what to write. At Woodsboro High, Charlie and Robbie are talking about his new camera that makes him mobile. Jill, Kirby, and Olivia arrive at school, and Robbie asks what their favorite movie is. Which Olivia somehow doesn't get where it's from. Robbie's like, it's from Stab 1. Duh. He asks Kirby for her favorite scary movie. She says Bambi. Charlie tells her that's funny as the girls walk off. Robbie says that she doesn't know he exists, and Charlie says she wants him. There's been a lot of things with people saying that Randy would be like an incel and all this, and I think Randy would have evolved more, and I don't think that he necessarily had an obsession with Sydney, as some people like to claim. Like, oh, he followed her to college. I think they maybe just went together because they'd been through something traumatic together. If anybody's gonna be like a creepy, like, incel type person, it's Charlie. Like, I don't know. Charlie has always just skeeved me out. I don't know. I didn't care for Charlie. He's probably one of my least favorite Ghostface. But anyway, so Jill tells Kirby that Charlie likes her and that she could do a lot worse. Jill closes her locker and we see Trevor standing there. He asks if they could talk and he says he cares about her, made her happy, and should have never let her go. She tells him that when you tell someone you love them and she gives you everything, and yes, it's stated like that. Then goes out with someone else that's dumping her in betrayal. Robbie is apparently recording all of this and asks Trevor for his favorite scary movie, and Trevor jumps at him, causing him to run off. Gail arrives for Sydney's book signing and hears her reading a passage. Sydney and Gail see each other, and Gail tells her that she hasn't read it yet. Sydney tells her she knows where she can get one. And I guess it's supposed to be like the "I'll send you a copy" line from one, because they laugh and hug. It seems very forced. But then Dewey arrives. Sydney's much warmer with him, and he's like, "No, we need everybody to stay where they're at." Rebecca's like, "I'm running an event." She calls him Barney Fife. He tells her that it's a police event now. And when Gail tries to ask what's going on, Hicks tells her it's a police matter and to let them handle it. Dewey says a phone was taken from the scene of a crime and was traced to these coordinates. He tells her that the rest is need to know, and she's like, "I'm not need to know." Gail does this the entire time in this movie, which is incredibly unfair to Dewey. They catch the killer and it goes to trial. Her interfering could be a major problem. So I get 100% why, when he's the sheriff, it's a huge deal. Like, you could say that in the first one, he was, you know, a brand new deputy who, you know, was starstruck. But now he's the sheriff of this town. Like, he is the law. He can't let her be as involved. He can't tell her things. And it drives me nuts, because Gail's really unfair in this movie. So Dewey calls the phone. They hear it ringing outside. They go to a car, and it's Sydney's rental. Inside the trunk is the phone, the knife, and mask, with blood all over posters of Sydney's cover. In class, everyone's phones start going off, and they find out about Jenny and Marnie. Robbie asks what everyone's favorite movie is, and they're all like yelling at him, telling him to shut up. They see news vans pouring in. Gail's at the station. She tries to go in where Dewey is, and Hicks stops her, saying he's conducting an interview. Gail's like, "Oh, I love interviews," and she tries to go in, or through, Judy. Gail asks if she's going to arrest her, and Judy's like, "Yeah, if it comes down to it." Gail says that she doesn't mind that she's working with her husband, or that she bakes in those little treats like she does, but if she's going to act like him, she'd better put on a mustache, because she sounds ridiculous. Dewey opens the door, and Sydney walks out. Gail tells him to tell Betty Crocker if there's been another murder, and Dewey grabs her and cuts her off, dragging her in his office, saying that's not public information. And she's like, "It's all over the internet, and the whole world knows about it before her." Hicks is like, "Oh, she wants to be part of the investigation." And Gail asks if she's familiar with the phrase, "I wrote the book on this," and slams the door. Dewey says he doesn't see how that matters. She said she wrote the book on this, and he tells her she's not a journalist anymore. She tells him not to treat her like the media, because she helped solve these three times, and it was him and her. He tells her that he's sheriff now, and she asks if he's going to let her help. He says he cannot, and so she says she's going to go rogue. That this is what she's good at and what she knows how to do. Before she leaves, she has one final remark for Deputy Judy.
"Your lemon squares taste like ass."
Perkins tells Dewey about Jill and Olivia's calls. They're there with Kirby. Sydney somehow gets to go into the interview room, which makes absolutely no sense if Gail can't be in there. So, it's frustrating, because yes, Gail is in the wrong, but Dewey's letting Sydney in and not Gail. Like, I don't know. Let them all in or let none in. So, Sydney asks about the phone call, and Kirby says it was the killer's voice from a stab, or, you know, Sydney's life. Judy asks if Kirby got a call, and she says she didn't, so now she thinks she's next. Sydney says that she shouldn't be here, she should leave town. Dewey's like, "No one thinks that you're involved, but, you know, everyone's a suspect." Judy says she may be a material witness because of her car. Rebecca's on the phone with Henry, saying that she thought that Woodsboro was a lame PR move, but...
"Fuck me well. Best idea ever."
She sees Gail runs over, saying that Gail was her 90s. Gail tells her that it's Gail Riley now. And Rebecca says yes, that she gave it all up for love. Gail says they've been married for 10 years. Rebecca's like, "Oh, just like your Stab characters. Wow." That Gail then mocks. Rebecca says that it seemed more like a movie romance, because in real life they would never be. Gail glares at her. Rebecca gives her kudos for dropping off with a professional map and asks if she plans on revitalizing her tarnished brand. Gail tells her she's got about 2 seconds before she revitalizes her face with her tarnished brand. Rebecca leaves, and Gail says she still got it. At Jill's house, Kirby sees Sydney and Dewey talking. She tells Jill and Kate that Sydney's so pretty, and with what she has survived, she must have scars everywhere. Kate says that her mom was her sister, and that she has scars too, but no one ever asks her about her scars. Kirby apologizes, and Jill tells her that she means knife scars. And Kate is just such a weird fucking character. Like, I wish she'd been just cut out of the movie, because she says weird stuff like this, and there's scenes later on that are cut that make a little bit more sense for her, but she just could have been erased from this entire movie and it would have been fine. We cut to Dewey and Sydney, and she asks about him and Gail. Dewey says he's fine, but it's been hard on Gail. Small town life with a small town husband. There's not a lot to write about. Sydney asks if they're okay, and Dewey quotes her book back to her. They have a wonderful sibling-esque relationship. Jill goes to her room, which Trevor has snuck in. She tells him the cops are out front, and he says that they're no match for the ninja. Blah, gag me. He asks why she's in the house with Sydney and compares it to Top Chef with Jeffrey Dahmer. She tells him to get away from the window and tells him he has no right to be here anymore. He says that he heard she got a call from the killer and asks if that's true. She asks why he cares, and he says that she'll feel safer with him around. She tells him she doesn't trust him. While they're talking, Sydney knocks on the door and comes in. Jill says that Trevor's just leaving. He goes out the window, but not before telling Sydney that she's smaller in person. Sydney tells her that she reminds her of herself and tells her to lock the window. She leaves Jill's room and actually gets scared by Hicks standing in the hallway in the shadows like a complete fucking weirdo. Deputy Hicks asks if she remembers her. You know, they went to high school and had homeroom and drama club together. They were in Peter Pan, where Sydney was apparently Tiger Lily and Deputy Hicks was a lost boy. Sydney has no idea who she is, and she's super creepy in this scene. Outside, Perkins goes to the car where Haas is working on a crossword puzzle. They comment on Olivia coming home, and Perkins is like, oh, she could live next door to me. And it's super gross because she's a minor. Like, why is this shit in here? So, Jill and Kirby are watching Shaun of the Dead when Olivia calls. Kirby asks if she wants to come over, and Olivia won't with Sydney in the house. But she's home alone at her house. So Jill, being an asshole, calls Olivia and tries to do a fake ghost face voice. Olivia asks if she has heard where Stabathon is, and Jill says her mom won't let her go. Kirby's phone rings and it's Trevor on the caller ID, but we know it's really Ghostface. He's whispering, she can barely hear him, he's saying that he's not Trevor, and Jill tells Olivia that he's being weird. Ghostface keeps asking for Jill.
Come on, Mr. Ghostface, whisper to me. Aren't you supposed to ask me a question?
All right, how's the movie?
What movie?
Shaun of the Dead.
Then Kirby asks him how he knows, and he says he's standing in the closet. Kirby tells Jill that Trevor is being super weird, and Ghostface says this isn't fucking Trevor, and tells her to open the door. She tells him there's cops out front, and he says he has time to slice someone open. Olivia's looking through a window to see what's happening, and Kirby goes to open the closet. She calls him a liar, and he says he never said he was in her closet. Olivia's closet door opens, and she's stabbed in the chest. They start screaming for her, and Sydney comes in. Olivia gets stabbed in the hand, slammed into her dresser, into her vanity. Sydney sees him stab Olivia in the back through the window and goes running for Haas and Perkins, who are gone. Ghostface throws Olivia on the bed and starts stabbing her over and over again. He picks her up and slams her head through the window, facing Jill's house holding the knife up. Jill grabs Kirby and they take off as Sydney gets in the house. She walks into Olivia's room and sees that it's covered in blood and basically her insides are on the outside. Ghostface calls Sydney and welcomes her home. She tells him to come for her if he's got the balls for that. He tells her that she still thinks this is about her and that she's the star. She tells him it's not a movie and he says it will be. Sydney says that they are innocent people and he tells her to spare him the lecture. She's done well off this town and what about the people she left behind? He tells her that he has plans for her and that he's going to slit her eyelids in half so she can't blink when he stabs her in the face. She'll die when he wants her to and not a moment before. Jill comes in and Sydney tells her not to come in or look. Jill says that Olivia said she was the angel of death. Ghostface comes out and slices Jill's arm and Sydney knocks him down the stairs. She hits him with a picture on the wall where she actually injured the stuntman by hitting him too hard. You can see that in the blooper reel. So that's another incident of Neve Campbell attacking the poor Ghostface guy and hurting them. Not to say that she hurt him for real, real, but like there's a moment where he's like dazed and she's like, oh crap. Anyways, so she knocks him down the stairs after he tries to stab her in the chest. She kicks him in the face, and that's when Perkins and Haas arrive. She turns her back, saying he's in there, but when she turns back, he's gone. Sydney calls for Jill, who tells her to stay away. So Sydney walks back when Trevor shows up and goes to Jill to take her out of the house. Kirby comes in asking if she's okay, and Perkins and Haas say that Ghostface isn't back there. Perkins asks Sydney if she's okay. She tells him to look upstairs. She goes outside and people are gathered on the street yelling at her. Jill apologizes for what she said and asks if she wants to get her face looked at. Dewey asks what happened, and Haas says that he saw him two houses back, so Perkins went around back to cut him off and met Haas coming around. Robbie is recording for Hall Pass at the hospital with Charlie when Gail walks up. She asks him to turn his camera off for a little old school off the record. He tells her that he can't because he owes it to his audience. She tells him to turn that fucking thing off right now, which of course he does. He asks if they're the two that run the movie club at Woodsboro High. Charlie runs it, Robbie's VP. And of course, Charlie corrects her that it's Cinema Club. Gail asks if they know the movie buffs at their school and asks if they could catch the killer by working together, two generations intertwining their passion for media. Robbie says, "I love you," and she tells him, "Very good," and tells them to give her the inside scoop on the Gore Geeks at Woodsboro, and she'll give them something in return, a celebrity visit to Cinema Club. Charlie asks about Sydney, and he says it would be a big deal because she's the star. Gail says that she's the Daniel Radcliffe to her J.K. Rowling. Sydney gets a clean bill of health from the doctor, and Rebecca tells Sydney that Random wants to lock her in for three more books now, and she can name her price. She starts naming off all the places that she's booked Sydney to give interviews for, and Sydney asks if she's read her book. Rebecca says that she'll wait for the movie and tells her to accept her situation. She's a victim for life and that she should embrace it. Sydney fires her, Rebecca goes to get in her car and is basically talking to herself and imitating Sydney. When the elevator goes a little nuts, nothing comes of that. She says that Sydney never gets laid or shit-faced, and she thinks that she'll call tomorrow and apologize. She goes to her car when her phone rings, and it's Ghostface asking for Sydney. He tells her that she is the message and asks if she's writing it all down. She tells him it's hard to hear him because she's in the hospital, and he tells her that he has the time and she doesn't. Her car alarm goes off, and Ghostface says it doesn't sound like she's in the hospital, but that she's in a parking garage. A dark and deserted parking garage. He said he'll be happy to put her in the morgue. Rebecca gets in her car and locks the doors, and even checks behind her when her phone rings again. She says no, throws it in the back seat. She can't get her car to start, and realizes her hood's open. Ghostface jumps on the hood with cords in his hand, and she sees a car leaving the garage and screams for help, but Ghostface is now gone. So for whatever reason, she gets out of the car. She looks under it, her car alarm goes off, so she runs to the stairwell, can't get the door open, handle breaks off in her arm, turns around, sees Ghostface running at her, and he stabs her in the stomach. Allison Brie had a super weird look on her face. It almost looked kind of sexual, like it was a choice. So Dewey's giving a press conference saying that they're following a number of leads. Gil comes up asking if he has any comments about the facts that the killings resemble the original Woodsboro murders. However, because of changes in the script and a bunch of deleted scenes, which we'll get into in a little bit, this line makes no sense. These killings do not look anything like Woodsboro. Dewey tells her later, and she's pissed because she's basically trying to act like the media and he's just blowing her off. Dewey says they're close to bringing this whole situation under control when Rebecca's body comes flying off the top of the parking structure and lands on a news van. He sends Haas and Perkins to look at the top of the parking structure. No one's up there. Gail goes up to Dewey, who's checking on Rebecca, and asks if this is all under control. And he's like, what am I supposed to say? She says she may not be wearing a uniform, but she happens to have a lead and he doesn't. She tells him to let her know when he's back on Team Gail and yells at the other reporters, calling them amateurs. We never find out what her lead is. Back at Woodsboro High, we have Cinema Club. Sydney and Gail are there. Sydney asks if he's filming the entire high school experience, meaning Robbie. And Charlie says that it's the one component that the killer is missing. Gail asks for clarification, and Charlie says that if you want to be the new version of Ghostface, that he should be filming the murders. Robbie says that it's the next step in psycho slasher innovation, film in real time, upload before you get caught, making your art as immortal as you. And they both say they're not trying to implicate Robbie. But they've forgotten all about Mickey. He did film his murders in Scream 2. Dewey and Gail saw the footage, so this seems stupid. I don't understand why, like, I get later on for motive purposes why they're saying that, but the fact that they include this in here, Mickey recorded this. Like, we know that the killer has done this. He did it in 97. So the fact that it's 2011 and you're saying this is the new innovation, it's not. So Sydney asks who they think is behind the murders. Charlie says that it has to be a stab fanatic working on less of a shriekle and more of a scream make because everything is a remake.
There are still rules, but the rules have changed. The unexpected is the new cliche.
Yeah, you gotta have an opening sequence that blows the doors off, dial up some flashy music video direction, and the kill's gotta be way more extreme.
Modern audiences get savvy to the rules of the originals, so the reversals become the new standard. In fact, the only surefire way to survive a modern horror movie, you pretty much have to be gay.
Which is complete bullshit. There's a trope called barrier gays, which is where gay people die constantly, especially gay women.
So why are you so sure that the killer's working by the rules of a horror remake?
Well, the original stab structure is pretty apparent.
Two kids killed in a house when their parents are away?
And then the school's hot chick savaged beyond recognition?
We all know where it goes from there.
A party.
Exactly. A party. Guaranteed third act main cast bloodbath.
This is their way of making the pattern more apparent and more subtle versus being a complete copycat of the original Woodsboro killings. Gail asks if they know of a party that's happening. They mention Stabathon. Charlie says they watch all 7 Stab movies. And Sydney says there's a killer patterning his murder after the original movie. And she's like, you need to call it off. And Robbie's like, it's Friday. We can't be the only party in town. Gail asks for the location. They won't give it. Gail's like, we're working together. But they won't budge. And they want to start a Q&A. Sydney and Gail leave instead. So Jill tells Sydney that she feels like she's under house arrest. Sydney says she knows how she feels and apologizes for Olivia. Jill apologizes for Rebecca and asks how she deals with people staring at her. Sydney says that she tries not to think about herself. She focuses on the people she cares about and the rest works out. Jill says that she saved her life last night and their family, but she hardly knows her. She wonders if she would have been brave enough to do the same. Sydney says she hopes she never has to find out. Jill goes upstairs. Sydney sees the shadow of something weird in the reflection, so she looks in the living room, sees nothing. Jill calls Kirby, who's at Stabathon, saying that Olivia would have wanted her there. Trevor's also there, and Jill's like, this is not his scene. Kirby says maybe he thought she would be there. Jill says her mom is freaking out, and it's not pretty. Kirby tells her to do her good girl thing, and she'll drink for the both of them. We see decorations and people dressed in costumes, and Gail actually sneaks in and covers her face with a ghost face mask. IMDb credits Matthew Lillard as a Stabathon guy. He did visit the set, but he didn't walk on while filming. Gail puts her cameras around while Robbie and Charlie start the Stabathon with Stab 1. Gail puts a camera right in front of the screen and goes to her car to see what footage she has. Suddenly, all of her cameras start getting covered up. One of them turns around and you can see that it's Ghostface. Gail calls Dewey and tells him that she's at the Stabathon and she thinks the killer is about to make his move. Dewey asks how she's so sure, and she's like, come on, how meta can you get? And I'll be honest, I had no idea what meta meant, and I think the movie could have explained it better instead of making the main trio seem older and out of touch, because it didn't seem as in the vernacular as it is now. Gail tells Dewey that he has to get out here. He catches the killer, she'll get the story, and he says that he thought that she was going rogue. Like, what the fuck, Dewey? I get she's being a pain in the ass the whole movie, but like, people's lives are on the line. If the killer's gonna make his move, as the sheriff, you should fucking be there. So she thanks him for having faith in her and hangs up to fix her equipment when Dewey finally starts heading that way. Kirby walks by Charlie and Robbie, saying that she's kind of impressed. Gail goes back to fix her camera. Dewey finds Gail's car and starts looking at her footage. Gail sees there are other cameras there that she didn't set up. She walks towards it with her camera basically pointing behind her and doesn't see Ghostface coming up. Gail gets slashed on the arm and Dewey comes up running to the farm. Ghostface stands over Gail and stabs her in the shoulder after Dewey tries shooting and missing. Gail asks if he caught him and then tells Dewey about the other cameras. And when we get into the who killed who thing, from here until the killer reveal, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because you have everyone in very different locations. Like, the house or the barn that this thing's at is like out in the middle of nowhere, practically. Jill and Kirby seem to live on 2 different streets in pretty populous areas. So you could assume somewhat in the center of town. It's not like Sydney's house that was on the outskirts of Woodsboro. It's kind of weird to try to figure out how they're all getting back and forth because here, you have Gail getting attacked and Ghostface turning all the cameras around, but Charlie was just with Robbie. So did he get away and do all this shit, or is it telling it out of order? Did Jill already leave the house and do all this shit and then go back to her house, or did Charlie ditch Robbie, go to Jill's house, and then go back to pick up Robbie? Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and it's super frustrating. So Haas and Perkins are outside of Jill's house, and they're talking about how movie cops always die unless you're Bruce Willis. Perkins says he'll take the next perimeter and says he'll be right back, but he stops himself and he's like, I'm not supposed to say that. Haas says, new decade, new rules. You can come back and find me dead. Haas decides to go instead. Perkins tells him to be careful. Sydney hears wind chimes going off and goes outside to see if anyone's there. She takes them down as Haas goes around the back to see that there's a window open. He reports to Perkins, who doesn't answer. Sydney hears dogs barking and puts the wind chimes down, going inside. Hawkins goes to the cop car to see Perkins, who's down on the steering wheel to prank him. He jumps out at him, and they don't see Ghostface sneaking in behind them. Haas gets stabbed in the back. Perkins is stabbed in the forehead. He gets out of the car and walks in front of the car with Ghostface behind him, just kind of watching. Perkins falls to his knees and says, fuck Bruce Willis, and falls down dead. A lot of people really hate this kill and this line, but Wes Craven wanted to include it because the skull stab was in a report or a video or something that he watched of someone who survived it, and he thought it was interesting. So Sydney hears the wind chimes going off again and grabs a knife. She looks out and sees Kate fixing them. She's apparently been grocery shopping because now's the time for that. She goes back to her car to get the last bag, and Sydney starts getting out the groceries, which includes an open box of Cheerios, so Kate must have got hungry while doing it. I don't know. The phone rings, Sydney yells for Jill to get it. She doesn't answer it, so of course Sydney grabs it, and it's Ghostface. He tells Sydney that she's a survivor and it's her only skill. He asks what good it is to survive if everyone else is dead, and tells her to turn on the news. She finds out that Gail was attacked and in serious condition. Ghostface asks if it was worth coming home. He says, friends count, but it's the family ties that cut deep. He tells her that she can't save them and she can only watch. Sydney goes to get Jill, who's gone. She looks at her computer and sees her message to Kirby about how she wants to get out. She tells Kate that Jill's at Kirby's and they need to get her back. Kirby calls, of course she's not answering. Sydney wants to go get the cops, but Kate tells her that they're gone. They go to leave and see Ghostface's reflection in the wind chimes. They go out front, but somehow Ghostface has made it all the way around and gets his knife in the door. He sticks his arm in, and Sydney has Kate brace it from the bottom so she drops to the ground. Sydney slams the door shut on his arm and locks it, but Kate is stabbed in the back through the mail slot. She tells Sydney to tell Jill that she's sorry and dies. Sydney goes to leave and sees Judy outside, and she says she couldn't get a hold of Haas or Perkins. She goes to check on Kate, and Sydney leaves while she's checking on her. At the hospital, Dewey tells Gail that it's him and her forever, no more on her own. She asks Dewey to promise to kill that motherfucker. At Kirby's house, Kirby is telling Jill what all she missed. Robbie's freaking out because Gail was stabbed after telling them to cancel everything. Charlie says that the party is the false ending, and he wants to put on Stab 6, which Kirby says was Olivia's favorite, when Jill tries to refuse. Charlie compliments her movie collection and they play a little bit of horror trivia. Robbie is still freaking out, saying the police will come, they're going to shut down his website, and that they're so dead. Trevor walks in agreeing, and also tells Kirby she shouldn't leave her door open. Kirby asks why he's there, and Trevor says he found the after party. Kirby tells him it's the anti-party and it's invitation only. Trevor's like, well, Jill invited me. She's like, I didn't. And he says that Jill texted him, she can't find her phone, so she goes off to look for it. Trevor asks how it feels to be accessories to a crime. Robbie's freaking out, saying his life is over. And I wish we would have had more of this Trevor. The Trevor in these little scenes is funny. He's very enjoyable. Red herring Trevor sucks. And most of his scenes were actually cut from the movie because they spent the whole time making him a red herring instead of actually showing some sort of personality. So Trevor asks which one of them texted him from Jill's phone, and Charlie asks if they're really supposed to believe that he's telling the truth. Kirby says that his phone was missing, and he says he got a new one. Hicks calls Dewey to tell him that Kate was killed and Sydney fled the scene. He asks about Haas and Perkins, and Hicks said they were found dead 2 blocks away in their car. Back at Kirby's, they're watching Stab 6, and Robbie is getting more drunk. He goes outside and hears Kirby ask Charlie if he wants to sit next to her. Robbie turns on his webcam and says that his Charlie may just get lucky with a girl. He says Woodsboro High may just be in for geek history. He puts his camera back on his head and then hears a sound. He starts looking around and runs into a potted plant, knocks his headset off. He puts it back on, but now it's on backwards. Inside, Kirby tells Charlie she knows he's in the movie, but now's the time to make a move. He asks her about her making one. She's like, I just did. And she tells him that he's pretty cute when she's scared, lonely, and drunk. As he goes to kiss her, Trevor comes back in looking for Jill. Kirby and Charlie jump apart, and she says that she's upstairs, and thank God he's here to protect her when he can't even find her. Trevor says that he loves this part and sits down to watch the movie with them. Charlie takes off pissed, and Trevor asks if he interrupted something. Kirby glares at him and asks, "Who the hell invited you, Trevor?" And he leaves saying he'll be upstairs. Robbie is still outside and goes towards the front door. He checks his feed and realizes that his camera's on backwards. He flips it and Ghostface is somehow walking through the front door. He stabs him in the chest and then in the back. He throws him on the ground and Robbie's like, "You can't, there's rules, I'm gay." And Ghostface stabs him again. No idea if Robbie actually was gay or was saying that to survive. I thought the whole thing was stupid, especially considering this movie is written by a gay man. So Kirby hears something and pauses the movie. She is not far from the front door, so I don't know how she didn't hear Ghostface in the house. Kirby goes to open the door and Jill comes from upstairs saying that she didn't text Trevor, so he's a liar. Jill says that he's not upstairs and they open the door to find Sydney. She tries to get Jill to leave with her when they see Robbie. He yells run and collapses. They all run inside and Ghostface grabs Sydney's leg. She kicks him down the stairs and Kirby somehow gets separated from them. Sydney tells Jill to get under the bed and hide. Ghostface breaks through the door and goes outside where he hears Sydney telling Jill to run, which would be ingenious because then Jill's there safe and hiding if she wasn't, you know, the fucking killer. So Sydney goes along the roof trying to get away. She stops, calls Dewey. She tries to get in through other windows, unaware the Ghostface is circling back. He knocks her off the roof. Dewey sends everyone to Kirby's, which at this point has to be pretty fucking far from where they were at the Stabathon, considering how long it takes Dewey to show up, which means it's really difficult to explain Jill and Charlie getting back and forth from Stabathon to Jill's house and then Stabathon to Kirby's house. It's really fucking annoying. And they actually take care of it in the other script. In the other script, Kirby and Jill live like two houses from each other. It literally is like Jill's house, Olivia's house, and then maybe two more down as Kirby's house. Sydney runs around to the front of the house and Kirby grabs her. The landline's dead. She asks where Jill is. Kirby says she heard her yelling for her and asks if Jill got away. Sydney says that she's safe and Kirby takes her to a room in the basement where they can lock themselves in. Charlie's at the back door with blood on his hands. He said he found Robbie and there's someone else out here. Sydney says that she can't trust him not to let him in, so Kirby tells him to get away from the door. She says that she's sorry and we see Ghostface attack him. The lights go out and come back on and we see Charlie duct taped to the chair. Ghostface tells Kirby to tell Sydney that heads are gonna roll tonight and tell Sydney that it's all because of her. Sydney tells her that she's gonna get Jill and to keep him on the phone. Ghostface says that he knows that she likes horror movies and she gets to live in Stab. Kirby's like, no, Charlie's the expert. He starts asking trivia and it's Jason, Michael, Leatherface, and Freddy Krueger's weapons. When Kirby begs him to let him go, Ghostface says to ask Sydney for help, which is odd because Sydney doesn't like horror movies. In a previous script, they actually had Sydney answering the questions, which obviously made no sense. He tricks Kirby with a multiple choice question that has a none of the above answer.
Name the remake of the groundbreaking horror movie in which the villain...
Halloween, Texas Chainsaw, Dawn of the Dead, The Hills Have Eyes, Amityville Horror, Last House on the Left, Friday the 13th, A Nightmare on Elm Street, My Bloody Valentine, When a Stranger Calls, Prom Night, Black Christmas, House of Wax, The Fog, Piranha. It's one of those, right? Right?
She says she got it right and goes to Charlie. Sydney gets upstairs and realizes that Jill is gone. Kirby untapes Charlie and he grabs the knife saying this is making a move and stabs her in the stomach. He says 4 years of classes and she notices him now. He stabs her again, calling her a stupid bitch. We don't see Kirby die and rumors are that her contract said she couldn't die on camera. Wes Craven has also said that she wasn't dead. Sydney goes downstairs and opens the basement door. She doesn't hear Kirby and backs out only to be grabbed by Charlie. She backs up and slams Charlie into the wall, breaking his grasp. She runs to the door when another ghost face comes running up and stabs her in the stomach. Jill removes her mask, saying that this is when the cameras turn off. She takes a camera out of her mask, and Charlie says he has great footage of his Robbie kill. It's better than Jenny, Marnie, or Olivia. Jill says they'll cut and upload later, making it all traceable to Trevor. They pull him out of the pantry, and if you pay attention to his clothes, he is dressed exactly like Neil Prescott in Scream 1. Charlie throws him on the ground, and Jill yells for him to shut up. She says that Sydney thought she had a shitty boyfriend. Here's one that fucks you, dumps you, and doesn't even make you famous. She kicks him, and Charlie tells her that the cops would want her to have this gun for her protection and gives it to her. Trevor's begging her to stop, but she tells him that he shouldn't have killed all those people and put it on video, but it means a lot that he did it for her. He's confused, and she starts yelling that she's not the girl you cheat on, and just straight up shoots him in the dick. Charlie tells her they're good on time, and she shoots Trevor in the head. Jill asks if she's ready for Act 3. Charlie tells Sydney that Trevor is this generation's Billy Loomis, and they're the innocent victims, Sydney and Randy. Jill said that with her, they only heard about it, but with them, they'll get to see it. Charlie shows footage of Marnie's death, except it's how she died in the original opening. You'd think they would have fixed that. She said that they're gonna have fame like she never dreamed of. Charlie says this time Randy gets the girl. They kiss, and Charlie tells her that she's amazing and the perfect victim. Jill says that she's told so many lies that she was starting to believe all of them herself, and she says that she's born for this. Sydney asks how she could do this, and Jill asks if she knows what it was like growing up in this family. All she heard was Sydney this and Sydney that. She said that Sydney was always so fucking special, but now she's the special one. Sydney says that she'll slip like they always do. Jill tells Charlie to get on with this, and he hands her the knife, and she tells him to be strong and hold still. Now, if you listen to Scream 1, he is saying exactly what Matthew Lillard did as Stu by yelling, "Get up, get up, get up."
Old school, like Billy and Stu. Come on, baby, get it up. Come on. Shoulder me, shoulder me, shoulder me. Get it up!
Yeah.
Yeah! I'm ready, baby! Hit it! Get it up! Yeah, man, get up! Hit it!
She obviously doesn't shoulder him and stabs him right in the heart. Charlie says that's not the way they rehearsed, and Sydney's like, yeah, Billy and Stu, Trevor and you. Jill tells him that the media loves a sole survivor and ask you know who, which is not true. Sydney was never the sole survivor. Dewey and Gail also survived with her every single time. She tells him that he was the idea man and that Trevor was his partner. Jill tells Sydney that she doesn't need friends, she needs fans. This was never about killing her, it's about becoming her. She said, you know, even my own mom had to die to stay true to the original. She tells her that sick is the new sane, and she does like some crazy ass like eyeball work here. Like when she's talking, she'll widen her eyes all of a sudden, and it was really interesting. I like Jill. I will say I did not like when she's yelling at Trevor and being that like whiny bitchy girl, but later on I do enjoy her. So she's like, what am I supposed to do? Go to college or grad school or work? She asks how that she thinks anybody becomes famous when you don't have to achieve anything. You just have to have fucked up shit happen to you. Jill tells Sydney she has to die. New decade, new franchise, and there's only room for one lead. She tells Sydney that her ingenue days are over and stabs her again in the stomach, and Sydney falls to the floor. Jill starts panting, and this is the moment when you realize how batshit crazy she is. A lot of people think this is where this movie jumps the shark. I think it's absolutely wicked. To me, this is Billy and Stu 2.0. She has no choice but to do all this shit to herself. So she takes the tape off of Trevor, wipes her prints off the gun, throws it over by Charlie. She takes Trevor's hand and slaps his fingers over her face to make sure that like he scratches her and gets DNA under his nails. She takes his hand and puts it in her hair, pulling out a bunch of it. She takes the knife and runs it into her shoulder by slamming it up against the wall. She wipes her prints and puts it over by Trevor. But, like, it doesn't have any prints on it now if they're all wiped off. So I feel like, you know, that part was kind of stupid. She's banking on them taking her word. She then runs into the picture frame head first, busting up her face. And her last act is to fall into the glass coffee table. She kind of stumbles over to Sydney and collapses beside her, mimicking her position as we hear sirens approaching. Hicks and Dewey walk in to find all the bodies. Jill's being wheeled into the hospital with reporters asking her questions and cameras flashing and all this. This is where the movie should have ended. This is brilliant. But no, we have to continue to the fucking hospital. So Dewey's asking Jill how she feels, and she tells him that Trevor and Charlie tried to kill her. She asks if Gail's okay. Dewey says that she's fine. Jill says that if she ever writes a book, they'll be a good team with her matching shoulder wounds, which is never mentioned anywhere. Jill says that they're survivors and that she wishes that Sydney was too. Dewey tells her that they aren't sure, but she's in ICU and might make it. Jill says that she saw Trevor kill her, and Dewey says that she's hanging on. Jill asks to see her. Dewey says she's not awake and may not remember anything, so Jill will have to help her. He tells her to get some rest and leaves the room. Of course, Jill immediately takes off all of her cords and starts to go look for Sydney. Gail asks about Jill, and Dewey says that Jill wants to write a book together with her matching wounds. Gail asks how she knew she was stabbed in the shoulder, and Dewey takes off. Sydney wakes up in ICU, and Jill's like, what are you, Michael fucking Myers? Like, die. She takes the call button away and tries to choke Sydney, but Sydney pokes her in the eye and they go flying off the bed. Jill sticks her knee into Sydney's wound and hits them again, asking about her stitches. Jill hears Dewey yell for Sydney and hides with a bedpan. Jill sneaks up behind him and hits him in the head with the bedpan over and over again. She takes his gun and says that the ending was supposed to be at the house and that this is just silly. Sydney tells her to consider it an alternate ending, and I wish it was, because I hate this fucking ending. Sydney tells her she won't get out of this when Gail walks in. Gail's like, what about the book? And Jill's like, I'll have to write it myself. Judy comes in, tackles Gail to safety, but she tells Judy not to shoot or she'll blow Dewey's head off, which both Hicks and Gail look at each other in shock. Gail tells her to throw the gun over, which she does. Jill kicks it away and has Hicks stand up. She shoots her and then tells Gail to get up. Dewey's coming too, and Gail is walking towards her. Sydney turns on the chest paddles, and Gail asks for a final word. She says clear, and Jill falls to the ground, and Sydney tells her that she forgot the first rule of remakes, not to fuck with the original. Gail checks on Dewey, who asks what hit him, and Gail tells him not to ask. Dewey says that she was standing right behind him, and Sydney says they always are. Jill has actually still been awake and has been trying to grab for a piece of glass. Sydney turns around, and Jill stands up, and Sydney shoots her in the chest. Jill falls to the ground.
Nice one.
Hicks, you're alive?
Wear the vest. Save your chest.
We got two officers down, several injuries, and a new suspect.
We need a doctor, goddammit!
Sydney turns to Jill, saying that she doesn't know about her, but she feels a lot better. We see reporters outside of the hospital talking about how Jill is a hero and they're all waiting for her. They call her an American hero right out of the movies. The movie. I have to say, I love Scream 4. I always have. Could it be better? Absolutely. But Jill is so batshit crazy that I have to love it. Plus, this movie is 100% ahead of its time. If this movie had come out even 5 years later, it would have been loved due to Jill's motive. Like I said in the beginning, Scream 4 was the first movie that I could follow from beginning to end. It was 2010, so I was on Tumblr all the time, like a lot of us were. And someone named Banana Dog also lived in Northville, Michigan, and basically followed everything and shared pictures, and it was incredible. I tried to go back and find that original Tumblr, but thankfully they'd moved everything over to WordPress, so I was able to find it and relive all of it. Scream 4 basically came about because Kevin Williamson sat down and suddenly had an idea. Like we talked about in the last episode, his treatment for Scream 3 wasn't used, and he wanted to go back to Woodsboro. He called Bob Weinstein, and as soon as he mentioned Scream 4, Bob laughed and told him to start writing. The movie was announced in July of 2008. In July of 2009, David Arquette and Courtney Cox had signed on to star. A couple of months later, Neve Campbell signed on, and by March of 2010, Wes Craven was back in the director's seat. In May of 2010, Kathy Conrad, who had produced the first three films, filed a $3 million lawsuit against the Weinstein Company, alleging that they had violated a written agreement that her production company, Cat Entertainment, had first rights to produce. The Weinsteins argued that the contract required her services be exclusive to the franchise, which she felt called false pretext, claiming the previous films did not require this. In April of 2011, they settled out of court with confidential details. Some claim that she received cash plus a percentage of the profits of Scream 4. The movie was originally set to be released in October of 2010, but due to missing Thanksgiving and January 4th writing deadlines, the film was pushed to April. Because of his commitments to The Vampire Diaries, Kevin Williamson wasn't able to be as focused on writing Scream 4 as planned. An early draft of the script featured Dewey and Gail with the baby, but they figured the baby would make shooting impossible. Another option was to have Sydney fight with Ghostface and then be left for dead, which there'd be a two-year gap while she recovered. Bob Weinstein thought that the gap would slow the film down and requested younger characters to be brought in. I also prefer the original ending, which didn't involve the hospital scene, which we'll get into for a bit. or we'll get into in a bit. There were rumors that Sydney would also have amnesia and not remember who the killer was for the rest of the installments, because there was supposed to be a whole new trilogy planned. There were many rewrites and script updates that Kevin Williamson could not work on, so yet again, Bob Weinstein brought in Aaron Kruger to work on Scream 4. Wes Craven said that Kevin created most of it except for some of the ending, so it was their job to figure out the relationships of the characters and how the old and new cast would interact. Kevin was reportedly upset that his ending was changed, and I don't blame him. It basically stopped the entire new trilogy they had planned. The actors were reportedly not given the 140-page script past page 75 in order to protect Ghostface's identity. They also had to reshoot a few scenes after a test screening in January. Amy T. Garden's opening kill and Allison Brie's parking lot kill required 4 extra days of shooting. Rebecca's original death scene is much shorter and doesn't include her getting in the car. We also see Ghostface kind of shaking her car to set off the alarm to kind of scare her. There are many, many deleted and alternate scenes for Scream 4, and a lot of them I believe shouldn't have been deleted or changed. And I'm not the only one that feels this way. There are a ton of fan edits that have put the deleted scenes back into the film. I absolutely recommend checking those out. One that I watched that I loved is called The Fanatic Edit. I forget who did that one, but it's in parts, like 4 or 5 parts, one of which is missing. But it's really good. It puts Right Hand Red back into the movie. It adds in some deleted scenes. It takes out some stupid shit, like the fuck Bruce Willis line. And all in all, it just felt more cohesive. And of course, this movie has that shitty filter that's all over it. So you have people that tried to remove that to make it look like all the other ones. But I definitely recommend checking those out because they are pretty cool. As I mentioned earlier, they talk about the killer patterning his murders off the original. The alternate and deleted scenes show that off much more. The opening scene differs right when Jenny goes upstairs and Marnie grabs the home phone that's ringing. It's Jenny pranking her like in the theatrical, but she hears what sounds like Marnie getting attacked and then Marnie screaming. Jenny goes downstairs and sees the back door is open. When she gets closer, she sees Marnie on the ground, who is also pranking her. Marnie goes to get popcorn while Jenny stays on the couch. Marnie opens the fridge, and when she closes the door, we see Ghostface in the doorway. Marnie sees him, thinks it's a joke, and then Ghostface stabs Jenny in the back, and she falls back with Ghostface stabbing her in the chest and stomach over and over again. Marnie goes up and realizes that it's real, and he slices her arm. She runs to call 911 when he grabs her and stabs her in the stomach. She falls to the ground saying he's not real, and he stabs her again in the chest, and we get the title card. I loved this opening and wish they would have kept it. We also have a little more Dewey and Gale, which the movie truly needed. The deleted scene shows them getting ready. Dewey asks Gale if she's going to Sydney's book signing. Gale is like, has she ever been to one of mine? And we find out that Sydney hasn't been back to Woodsboro since her dad died, and that explains Neil's absence in the movie. We also hear Dewey saying that he can't go because of work and then stumbles over his words because Gale isn't working and has writer's block. We then get shots of the crime scene, which were featured heavily in the trailer, and it was nuts because like you would see behind the scenes photos and the trailers, and then you were shocked when you saw the movie because that wasn't in there. We see Marnie hung from the ceiling like Casey, and Jenny strapped to a chair and basically gutted like Steve. What's Your Favorite Scary Movie is written in blood on the walls, and it is awesome. Plus, Wes Craven's cameo as the coroner ended up getting cut because they changed the opening. Dewey and Perkins discuss the murder weapon, saying that it's a hunting knife, which clues Dewey in that this is the same type of weapon as before. I think this opening and these scenes would have been much stronger, and it would have had the fan service that the movie was missing. Hicks tells Dewey they can't find their phones, so they're tracing them to find out where they are, which leads us to the bookstore. We see more of Jill and Trevor arguing in the hallway. You briefly get to see the statue, but you can't tell what the hell it is because it's terrible. But in the deleted scene, we get to see that it's a statue of Principal Henry. The fountain scene that was also featured in the trailers is cut. It's a callback to the original, and this movie basically suffers from us not giving a shit about our new leads. The original gave us time to know the teens, and this one doesn't. Could it be that there wasn't enough pages in the script? Sure. So why not leave this scene in here? They're discussing the murders, accusing each other, and it also shows their movie knowledge. Everyone is kind of like a Randy. Charlie mentions that this will all be a movie, and later on the killer says it, so that could be why they cut the scene out. There's a scene where Dewey tests the force to see their response time, and they develop a strategy of looping around the house to cut the killer off, which Jill overhears and would explain how he was able to get away. After Olivia's death, we see Kate apologizing to Jill because she took a sleeping pill with her wand and didn't hear anything. This would explain how Kate is so fucking weird this entire movie, but no, that's cut too. And there's another part in this scene where Hicks is talking to Dewey about how there was a pet doorframe around Olivia's neck, and Dewey references that that's how Tatum died, and he says they're making a Woodsboro remake. Gail goes to Perkins and Haas to get statements. She asks if Olivia was the intended victim or if the killer left a message. They tell her to talk to Dewey, and she tells him that she's here as a journalist, so they need to pretend not to know her. They basically refuse, and after she leaves, the officers talk about her and Dewey being good and evil. Hicks says that Dewey doesn't have a dark side, so he had to marry one. It's just more creepy shit with Hicks. At the hospital, Kate tells Jill that Trevor's here and has been here the whole time. He goes to talk to Jill, and she asks to borrow his phone. He tells her it's missing. She tells him the caller ID said that it was him. He asks if the killer was in his house, and she tells him that would be his story. Trevor's like, oh yeah, so I'm a psycho killer who used my own phone. He asks if she really believes that. Trevor asks if she's ever going to forgive him, and Jill says that if Sydney can forgive all the fucked up people in her life, that maybe she could. They kiss. She tells him that she doesn't want to be a victim and she wants out of this town. Trevor tells her she's not a victim and she's not Sydney. He says sometimes lightning just strikes. Jill says that's a line from Sydney's book that he claims to have never read. She asks why he lied and asks if that's why he's back in her life, if he's just obsessed with Sydney. Trevor yells and is like, you think I'm killing people? He goes to grab her face, I guess to kiss her and tell her that he loves her, but she's telling him to get off, that he's scaring her, and he asks, what's it gonna take, which is very similar to Billy. We get another scene where Sydney's talking to Haas and Perkins when Gail arrives. She tells them she may have found suspects and asks to speak to Sydney alone. Perkins calls her Miss Weathers in a way that shows he's suspicious of her scheming. Gail tells her that if she's with her, they'll go to cinema club, and Sydney says whatever it takes to catch the killer, with Deputy Judy listening not too far away. We get another scene where Kirby's talking to Charlie and Robbie about Stabathon. Charlie and Kirby flirt a little bit more, and we see them briefly setting up Stabathon. We have more deleted scenes with Trevor and Jill looking outside for her phone. Jill has him check around back. He tells her he's not a bad guy. He may be stupid for showing up there, and she tells him that he's not stupid. He swears someone texted him from her phone. There's a longer clip of Robbie where he's drunk around the back of the house. He's filming and sees Ghostface in the woods. He turns around and runs into Trevor, who's looking for Jill's phone. We have an alternate scene with Dewey and Gail, where Gail asks why the killer didn't kill her, and Dewey says it's so she could write a book. We see Dewey put it together that it's Jill, which I prefer because they always make Dewey look so damn dumb when he's not. The script I found online follows a lot of deleted stuff, but there's also new things in it that I think would have been interesting to see. There's an additional call to Jill before the interview with Dewey where he tells her that he picked her. The teacher is also a huge red herring. In the script, the original reason why Trevor and Jill are fighting is because he was caught smoking weed in the girls' locker room. He gets kicked off the football team, loses his scholarship, and apparently fooled around with some girl named Jessica, who we're never introduced to. The phone call before Olivia's death in this script came from Charlie's phone, and they're watching Stab 6, not Shaun of the Dead. There's also a scene with Stephen Worth's brother, who references Steve always getting forgotten. Instead of Rebecca being completely insensitive, she tries to help Sydney leave Woodsboro, which of course they changed to the rental being compromised so they couldn't leave. Instead of Rebecca getting tossed from the top of the parking structure, she's killed off screen, and then her car is coasting down the road headed for the crowd, but crashes into a media van. Later, Gail tells Sydney that this is all her fault, and Sydney even agrees, which I find is just extremely out of character for Sydney. There's a lot more character interactions that this movie needed. Dewey, with Gail's constant interruptions, interviews Charlie after his phone is used. The police trace Charlie's phone and find him in the trunk of the teacher's, Mr. Baker's car. Gail doesn't believe it's him and also Gail doesn't believe it's Mr. Baker. She also doesn't believe it's Charlie because everything's so obvious. They don't have the Stabathon at all in this script. Instead, Jill goes to Kirby's house, which, like I said, is just a few houses down in this script. Kate is stabbed at the front door instead of through the mail slot. Haas and Perkins are outside of Kirby's and let Trevor and Charlie in. We find out that at Kirby's that it's Mr. Baker who busted Trevor in the locker room, so that would give Trevor motive. Jill goes upstairs. Trevor eventually goes to check on her. Robbie goes to the guest house. Charlie disappears when Kirby goes to get Robbie. Ghostface pops out of the pantry and kills Robbie. Sydney, Hicks, and Gail arrive at Kirby's house, and we see Haas and Perkins' cop cars covered in blood. Sydney finds Robbie's body and goes out the back door to find Kirby. Charlie catches up to them with blood on his hands. They go inside with Charlie banging on the glass, just like in the theatrical ending. We cut to the house where Hicks shows up with a ghost face mask and sees Jill in Kirby's room. We cut back to Kirby and Sydney when Ghostface calls the trivia. Sydney puts him on speaker so Kirby can do the trivia. Ghostface asks for the killers and Stab, which Kirby names them all in order, which this would have helped a lot of people think that the movies aren't actually connected, that each movie is its own standalone universe because they rarely reference any of the other killers other than Billy and Stu. So it's like 1 to 2, 1 to 3, 1 to 4. Having this in there would solidify that they're all in the same like universe, so that it's not multiple timelines. He asks the first victim in Stab, and like I said in the first Scream episode, it is a wonderful trick question that I was not aware was in this script because I've never read this script before. Kirby goes to say Casey, catches herself, and starts to say Steve, but then Sydney's like, no, it's Maureen Prescott. She's the first victim. He asks a few more questions, and when Sydney tries to leave, Ghostface is obviously watching and threatens to kill him if she leaves. We get our remake movie list, and instead of stopping, there's more trivia. So this would have gone on for a long ass time. Ghostface asks how old Jason was when he drowned. Sydney thinks it's a trap, but Ghostface wants an age. Kirby's doing this like out loud monologue trying to figure out the time and realizes he was 11. Ghostface is gone and they go outside to Charlie. Sydney goes to the main house while Kirby gets stabbed by Charlie, who's like, you weren't supposed to know 11, like what the fuck. Sydney sees Kirby collapse and runs for the house. She tries to hide in Kirby's bedroom, but she finds Trevor in the bathroom and runs out. She goes downstairs and sees Hicks' dead body. Jill reveals herself. Charlie drags Trevor, who Sydney can now see has been tied up. Trevor is pretty much killed immediately without the girlfriend you cheat on lines. She kills Charlie, then starts attacking herself. The script suddenly remembers that Gail is there because it says that she comes with Sydney and Hicks. But then you don't know whatever happened to her or where she went. Apparently she got knocked out. So before Gail wakes up, Jill jumps through the coffee table. We cut to Gail telling Dewey that none of this is his fault and at least Jill is okay. The media wants to interview Jill and Dewey tells her that her life has changed now. Jill agrees to give them one picture if they leave her alone and we hear the paramedics say a woman is alive and the movie ends before we find out who it is. I would have liked that part. Most of the stuff in this script, I would have liked that the trivia would have went on too long, and I like that they used more of Stab stuff. Like, I wish that would have stayed. I think if you're gonna have this whole movie within a movie universe thing, they should use it more. Like, we should know more about these movies, just because it's fun as hell to see how campy they can get. As far as casting for Scream 4 goes, originally Ashley Greene of Twilight fame was offered the role of Jill. She didn't end up taking it for whatever reason. Lake Bell was set to play Deputy Hicks, but she ended up having to drop out. Lauren Graham was actually cast as Kate Roberts, but ended up dropping out a few days into principal photography. Rumors flew that she was not happy with how her character was changed. There were rumors of a twisted Gilmore Girls-esque relationship between Kate and Jill that was completely removed, and then the role was substantially cut down. Lucy Hale was also supposed to have a bigger role, but after scheduling conflicts, was given a minor role. And then finally, we did have another lawsuit with Scream 4 that was not the Kathy Conrad one. In April of 2012, the Weinstein Company sued Kevin Williamson because they had bought the rights to Scream 4 from him, and he had agreed to give them a few projects, just like in Scream 3. One of the projects was something called Shadows, and Kevin tried to say that he still owned it. In January of 2013, they settled their dispute and the outcome was not released. And I can find jack shit about what this movie is, where it came from, if it changed titles. I know nothing. We didn't have so many cameos in this movie. Nancy O'Dell plays the reporter that interviews Sydney. She's an Entertainment Tonight host. Shanae Grimes plays Trudy in Stab 6. Lucy Hale, like we mentioned, plays Sherry in Stab 6. Anna Paquin plays Rachel from Stab 7, Kristen Bell plays Chloe from Stab 7, and Wes Craven plays the coroner in a deleted scene. Now, as far as who kills who, I think that Marnie and Jill were both killed by Charlie with Jill on the phone. Jill's phone call, obviously Charlie. Sydney's rental was staged by Charlie. Olivia had to be killed by Charlie, obviously. Sydney and Jill's attack, also Charlie. Rebecca Walters had to have been killed by Charlie because Jill's in the hospital. Like I said earlier, Gail's attack is where it all goes fucking nuts. I'm assuming Charlie had to get away from Robbie here. because Jill wouldn't have left on foot to go to the Stabathon and then go back home to wait for Kirby, which means that Jill had to have killed Haas and Perkins because she's already there, and Charlie would have to completely leave the Stabathon just to go back to meet up with Robbie to go to Kirby's. Kate, her kill had to be Jill because, again, Charlie's with Robbie, and this is... it had to be before Kirby picks her up, but the timing is crazy close. Driver's attack is obviously Jill. Robbie is killed by Charlie. Charlie's attack is Jill. Kirby's attack is obviously Charlie. Driver's killed by Jill. Charlie's killed by Jill. But then Sydney kills Jill. So what do you think? Do you love Scream 4? Hate it? Let me know all your thoughts. You can find me all over social media. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TerraTPod. We're also on Facebook in the TerraT group. You can catch horror news, podcast news, all kinds of fun stuff. So come join us. If you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to the podcast. And if you really like it, leave me a 5-star review. Again, I'm your host, Tara, and this has been Tara T.